Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Good morning.
David, and all the things given out?
I guess as many children as we have. We're going to do a style show with the children who are dressed up, so. So your last chance to give one here.
This morning, the program will be on Lion Art and Culture, Past and Present. David is continuing his from last week. David?
Thanks. Let's open this morning with a song. I feel that culture and a lot of the things takes a little bit of understanding, bit by bit, piece by piece, a little bit at a time. So let's do the song Inch by Inch, a garden song. Now to start out, today I have some of my assistants with me, some famous Mayan models from all around the world. And so we're going to have some of the children come up, or if anyone else has adorned themselves, come on up and we'll tell me your name, tell the group your name, and we'll tell you where their things are from. You want to come up here? Okay, this is Eric, and Eric is wearing a blouse or a wapil or a shirt here from Zunil. And there's a volunteer, Peace Corps volunteer in Zunil. Why don't you stroll around, Eric, so people can kind of see what you're doing. Eric, you can walk around so people in the back can kind of see it too. Eric is the Zunil is a volunteer there who is 77 years old, a woman 77 years old. She's been in the Peace Corps for 17 years. They had a special kind of thing. She had such a good relationship with the people there. So Eric has a wapil from Zunil. Here's another one from Aguas Calientes, the hot waters. He has, your name is? Okay, Luke has one from Aguas Calientes. And he has a thing here, a sash that the priests or the sacerdotes used to wear. And some of the modern priests wear these things too. So he's dressed up kind of like a sacerdote. And his thing is from Aguas Calientes, the hot water. Why don't you just kind of stroll around and let people see you too? Yeah, they're areas, but they're towns now. So Zunil, Aguas Calientes. And let's see, and Eric has a bag here. He's showing me a bag. The bag is done. It's from Frajanes. It's in the northern part of Guatemala, near the capital. And it's got some old motifs on, scorpions and donkeys and things, and then cars and buses. A part of your life there, yeah, so. Here's another one. What's your name? Judy has a piece on here from San Lucas Toman. It's a very bright blue color, very famous. If you ever see this and the little things on it, she's from San Lucas Toman. You want to walk around, let people kind of take a look at you? Okay. Here's another one here. What's your name? Josh. Josh has a band on here that's a Christmas decoration, and another one that's real popular. This Christmas decoration is from Totonicapan. A lot of the fine stitch work you see from Totonicapan. So Josh, why don't you walk around and let people see your things from Totonicapan. Here's another one from Totonicapan. Who are you?
Aaron.
Aaron is from Totonicapan. Has a stylish hat here. And this one, this has cats on it. And this is also from Totonicapan. So why don't you show people your things from Totonicapan. Another one. And what's your name? Heather. Heather is from Santiago Atitlan. This is where they had a massacre a year and a half ago. The people there have beautiful work, and usually they have a lot of birds and things on their wapils, but she has one with all Mayan, ancient Mayan things on this, and this wapil is just excellent, the work on this. If you want to look at these things afterwards, you can too, but this one, the work on this is outstanding. So she's from Santiago Atitlan. No, these, well, they're a combination. Just, some represent words, some are like syllables and things, but they're just kind of a... This one I was attracted to because this one reminded me when I was in Iran, has peacocks on it. Peacocks are really popular in this area too. And this one is from Comalapa. Comalapa, usually you can tell they have this kind of decoration like diamonds on it. And usually in their wapils will have this color red too. So she's from Comalapa with her peacocks on there. Okay, and you are?
Gretchen.
Okay, Gretchen. So why don't you kind of walk around and then you go back, let's see people take a look. And who are you? Katrina. Katrina has on a piece here from San Juan Zacatepecas, which is near Antigua, which is near the old capital city. This is from San Juan Zacatepecas, and her sash too is from San Juan Zacatepecas. This is one when I was first in the country. This is like the inch by inch. I did not like the style at all. And in my last half a year, it just really grew on me. And so I have some things from San Juan Zacatepecas. So she's from San Juan Zacatepecas. yeah, all of these are cotton. And all of these are they use German dyes now, and so they don't run and bleed. Like, you buy things in some parts of the world, they're tourist things, and you take it home, and it's red and blue and green and yellow, and you wash it, and it's orange. Everything. And Mary here is from Aguas Calientes also. She has a nice one here from Aguas Calientes. So you see this type of style? This is the hot springs, Aguas Calientes. Okay? I just want to show you a few. Afterwards, if you want to look at these things, I can answer questions after the service. But I just want to show you a few more of the more curious types of things. This is famous in Guatemala, this style hat. I used to be on the bus out where I lived, and I'd see people with these hats on. I said, why are these people wearing these hats? And if you go to visit the Church of the Black Christ, of Cristo Negro, who is right here on the hat, this is a common souvenir that people in the country buy for themselves. The Guatemalans buy these things. So I said, I've got to go to Esquipulas is where it is. And that's where they had a big peace conference a couple years ago. So I went to Esquipulas and bought myself one of these hats. I added a few extra little baubles to it, need a little more. And the children in my area just love to wear this thing. I've got a lot of pictures of kids with this hat on. So this is a very famous hat from Esquipulas. So this is a traditional style thing. And some of the things in the back are sashes like this. The colors look kind of nice, but not real bright. This is all silk. There's another one back there that doesn't look real bright. It's kind of subdued, but it's all silk. This is all made with silk. And the women, I've got some pictures in, I'll show you. The women wrap this one around their head and then have these two little jobs kind of hanging on the front. And so they, so you see women walking around with this. And this is one area too. This is in Alta Verapaz, one of the upper Verapazes, close to the Batán, where there was a lot of troubles until recently. And now the people are safe again, and they're going back to making arts and crafts and things like this. So we had a couple volunteers up there who were working with them. So this is, in some places they do, but most of their silk is imported. But they are starting, it's one of the things they want to start. These are natural dyes. These are about 50 years old. These are all natural dyes. These are made with walnut skins, whatever you can get. And these are all natural dyes. So this is a nice green natural. The termites got into it, made a couple holes in it in my house. They don't respect the old things there. And this one too, natural dye. And Sololá, both of these are from Sololá, which is near Panajachel. Some people might be familiar if you ever go there. It's a tourist place. This one, they make with a cotton that's natural brown in Sololá. This is close to it. I have a huipil on the back that's a natural brown cotton that only grew in the New World. Some of the cotton we had in the New World, the Spanish and other people thought this was better than the cotton they had in Europe. So a lot of this cotton, the best cotton was from the New World. And then there's a brown cotton there. This huipil also is quite nice. This is from another area that's been in a lot of turmoil, San Marcos, which is down in the mountains but closer down to the coast. And this one has some of the traditional things of reindeer, peacocks and things like this, horses which weren't here. These are new styles. But this was from San Marcos. So these are just a few of them. There are a lot more back there, but these are a couple that I just wanted to mention that were a little bit unusual in comparison to them. They're all unusual as far as I'm concerned. Oh, this is Yaspi, and there's a couple areas that do this. They take this and they tie and dye the threads, and then they weave it. So it's tied and dyed, all this. They call it Yaspi, and then they weave it. And there are a couple areas that only do that. That's more popular in a couple areas. Totonicapán and areas around Sololá. So they have to tie and dye this, and then they weave it. And you see a lot of shirts. Shirt I wore a couple times ago had this on. So it's tied and dyed, and then woven in the pattern that it's, the threads come out of. Okay, let's see. Yeah, we need some transition economics instead of going to the hard stuff. You know, so. Okay, fine. If you want to wear those during your RE time, you can wear those if you want to. Keep them on. If you don't, you can put them on the table back there, but you feel free to wear them. So thanks for being my models. There were a couple of seats, one was on the Peace Corps and one was on the Maya, that I had kind of sitting in the back here. If some people may not have gotten one, if you take like one to a family, once we get settled afterwards, if someone needs it, if you take one to a family, you can on the Maya in particular. just so people can share that one. I had about 30 of them made. One to a family trying to work out. Just today we'll be looking at some of the ancient Mayan types of things, and then some of the modern Mayan things that are going on, all on art and culture. This will give you an idea of some of the areas, the language that are, just in Guatemala alone, there are a lot of varieties of language up in Mexico, but most of the areas of the varieties of language in Guatemala are from the Mayan dialects. Outrider, there weren't many Mayan out here, but there were a big grouping of Chorti. And so there's Chorti out here. A big famous area was Hatikel. Quiche is also famous. When I came back to the United States, when I lived in Iran for 4 years, I didn't know the difference between Quiche and Quiche. I came back, I'd never seen the word Quiche before. You know, in 4 years, these things just catch on. I came back and people said, what's that? And he said, I looked at that and I said, oh, is that Quiche? And it wasn't. And then also in Maya, we spell quiche the same way in English, and it's quiche in Maya. So this is a group. A lot of our volunteers are working in the Mam area. Quite a few of these with the sparkly things are from the Mam area. Aguas Calientes is down in this area, Cachiquel. A lot of, most of these people speak Cachiquel. This is around Guatemala City and Antigua. This whole area here is Cachiquel. Then you get up into the north in the Batan is Quechí, so they have Quiche, Quechí. These are, this is really not a lot of people up here, but in Belize, which is over here, a lot of people spoke and moved there to speak Mopan Maya and Quechí. So a lot of these people have moved into Belize in the last 100 years with problems in Guatemala. So Belize is a big population of Mopan and Quechí. And up where I live, the Yucateca Maya, the people that came down from the Yucatan when I was in Belize.
Are they mutually understandable languages?
They, about 1100, they started breaking up. That's when the languages really started splitting up. And so they have a common root, and you can work things out. It's kind of like Spanish and Portuguese or something, or Italian, you know, all these. You can kind of work it out, then you have to do a sign language for the rest of it, so.
Where is Lake Atitlan?
Lake Atitlan is right here. Okay. Oh. Actually, it's the lake right there. And this is another one. There's a Lake Atitlan, and there's a Tatitlan, which is down here, which I, there's one museum there called the Popol Vuh Museum. I'll show you some, a few things from there. But they, the Maya that lived in this area, dumped big incensers, big incense type thing, like this big around, this high, into this lake. This lake was full of them. And it was just a ritual that they had in that area. They had this incense, and then to kind of ritually destroy these things. It's like a lot of people believe you make an art piece, it has life, and it serves its function, and then its soul has to go somewhere. So the art part of it is gone, and they throw it somewhere or do something with it. So a lot of these people dump it out here. So they have two big lakes there, this one, and then there's a lagoon over here too that was over in my area. It was really, really famous. All these have volcanoes. I should have brought a real map. Guatemala City would be right about right in the middle here.
Okay.
Actually, right here. Probably, it's in Espanol. That must be Guatemala City when I'm looking at this now. It must be right there. So Guatemala City, Antigua is in this area here. That's the Cachiquel area. And then you take the bus and go to a lot of them are, when you get into the Cachiquel, the Mam, and the Quiche, over in the, what they call the Occidente, the western part of the country, a lot of them don't only speak their own language. A lot of them don't speak. And so a Peace Corps volunteer would have to learn Spanish, and then learn the local language too, to work. Have an interpreter for a while, but eventually be able to speak in the language. I did this in Africa too, I had to do the same thing, which is a real experience to go through this. Learn one language and then learn your new, use your new language to learn another language. So. This is one of the first statues of the ancient Maya. It's probably about 1500, what we call, about 3500, what they call BP, before present. All the archaeologists got away from before Christ, BC. They talk about BP, before the present. And this was found up in Guatemala near Mexico. But when I was in Belize, I was in a state with a family that only lived half a mile from Cuello. Cuello is the oldest Mayan site now that they feel almost is one of the oldest beginnings of civilization in this hemisphere, even older than, you know, anything about the Olmecs. The Olmecs were always the old people, the ancients. Now the Maya, they feel, had a similar beginning at the time of the Olmecs. Probably about 2,500 BC, so 3,500 or 4,500 before the present. It had come up there, but it wasn't the big production thing yet. Once they started building monumental cities, then you needed the corn. Which is only the cobs were about this big. I mean, when they finally started being corn, it changed from like a wheat type thing to a little tiny cob thing. And then under domestication, it became what we have today. So corn, as we know it, may have been a more smaller type of thing. This is out of one of the codices. There are only three codices left in the world, the ancient books of the Maya. We thank Bishop Landa, who came into the Yucatan, to saving the three. He destroyed 450 before I realized, oh, maybe I should save these because maybe I need to understand what these people are all about. So I saved three. 450 were lost there. Who knows how many were lost otherwise. But this is the one that gave the people the clue to the way the Mayans looked at time. So this is the Mayan calendar on this codex that gave the people an idea of what time is all about in the Mayan world, which would take a long time to explain. The ancient Maya worshipped the corn. They had corn growing there in the sun. So that's a big part of their life. This is off of a new fancy like a greetings card. It was all in gold. It doesn't reflect very much on the screen. Here's just an idea of some of the Mayan motifs in Guatemala. The quetzal, the bird flying up there. Beneath the quetzal, the green bird, is coco. Those big pods on a limb, that's coco, the big yellow pods. Some of the pottery beneath that. The old mortar and pestle down below, the drawn different chilies and things. Poinsettias. A lot of our common household plants grow in that area, 10 feet high outside. When I saw what they call crotons, when I saw one outside of a neighbor's my house, 10 feet high, I said, you know, back there in the States, you have these little pots sitting in your house, you know, there it's outside like shade tree. Some of the early foods that the people in Mexico, Guatemala, and that eat were natural diet types of things, like worms and that. So here you have some guavas, I think they are, and some guava worms. So get them ready to put in the old pot, stir them up with a little soup. And tortillas de rana, the frog tortillas. You know, you folks like your tortillas with, you know, beef or chicken or whatever. Well, they also used to eat frogs. And they used to eat little crabs and things on too, but this is a frog tortilla. Or frog tamale, sorry, frog tamale. And what is becoming popular in the United States now is amaranth. Amaranth is a floral type of ornamental here, but it is a grain also. There are times of a grain. The Spanish forbade the people to use this grain because they would take the grain and make little bread things and put blood in it and make it like little sacrifice things to dedicate. Well, the Spanish didn't like that because they wanted to control the Eucharist types of ceremonies, which they looked at that being similar to, and they didn't want the blood sacrifice anymore. So the Spanish, for 500 years, the people haven't used amaranth. In India, it's popular as kind of a cereal of some sort, but now they look at amaranth as much more protein than wheat. It doesn't have much gluten, so you need to use wheat or something with it to get a little more gluten, but it has much more protein. So they said this could be the real crop in the world that could give people some protein. There's another one called esote. This is flor de esote. It's very popular in Guatemala. People mix this up and put it in eggs. When the esote season is in, people go nuts over this in the marketplace, eating these flowers. They look like, you know, big lilies of the valley when you see them. And up here, they use sell esote wood in for putting in your house to put plants in, like the things that wrap around these poles that you might buy sometimes. A lot of that's esote wood. And they use it for that because it just has some property that's it will work well with flowers. You can put flowers into it and grow them. So the esote wood is important. Flowers are eaten. Coco, cocoa, and down at the bottom is vanilla. Vanilla also came from this part of the world. Actually, most of vanilla came from like Veracruz, Mexico, but it was traded into these other areas too. And cocoa, as most people know, used to be money. They didn't have money, they used cocoa. A bag of cocoa, the value of a bag of cocoa. Said, well, you got five chickens there. Let's see, is that the value of this little bag of cocoa here? And so cocoa was their standard that they used for money. And in the New World, in Mexico, Central America, and even the United States, there were only two animals that were domesticated that people could eat. One was the turkey. And so this was one that people could keep corralled up somewhere and eat it. There weren't any others. This is a really popular dish. Like most of what we know as tortillas or tacos or tamales, they were made with turkey, not with chicken. And turkey, like in Guatemala, when you're going to have a big day, it's going to, they call them, in Mexico they call them guacalote, and Guatemala they call them chompipe. And when you're going to, and the short is chompe. And so if you're going to have a big day, you say, oh, we're going to eat chompe. You know, it's like, it's a big thing out of turkey. So. And one of the other domesticated animals for eating pleasure, the little chihuahua. That was the only two things that the Mexican and Central American people ate domesticated. Turkeys and doggies. Yeah.
No iguanas?
Well, they weren't domesticated. These are domesticated. The other ones were kind of, you know, you couldn't have a little chicken in the yard with iguanas in the back. They didn't figure that one out, you know, so. Here's another one that people ate. This is the national animal, one of the national animals of Belize. It's called the, Gibnut. Gibnut in English. Wisquintly in Spanish. Gibnut in English. And it's a little rodent type thing. But it tastes wonderful. And the when the Queen came to England, or Queen came from England for independence in Belize, 1981, they were going to serve her this dish. And it hit the English tabloids, as you might know. They get into stuff. They said, Queen to dine on royal rodent. No. No rodents for the Queen. You know, so she had chicken or something. So. Also, of course, chilies. What we know around the world, they look at most of the major voyages in the earlier time, exploration, were for spices. And pepper was one of the big spices. When they found chilies, which were only grown here, and took them back, India, Korea, all these areas now, this is where the chilies came from that they use now. They only had pepper before. When they saw the power of these chilies, everyone switched. So pepper kind of took the back seat to the chilies. The chilies came from this part of the world and they spread all around the world. This is a, not really easy to see, but this is real famous at Palenque. Giving ideas, just some of the Mayan style things. This is Pakal. This is from the Temple of Inscriptions in Palenque. This is one of the rulers kind of sitting here, ready to, he's dying, ready to go. And up above him is a big bird. I think on your sheets, on the Mayan sheets, I have a graphic of this, it's a little better. But there's a big bird up here, and that's the big bird of life, overlooking things. So this is life up here. Down below is this kind of skull-like creature, and this is the underworld. So whenever they show someone sitting up on this platform above the underworld, you know they're in good stead. So he's in good stead. The bird of life is overlooking him and everything. And there are various things around here which I'll show you later too. When Venus is in a certain position, when Mercury's in a certain position, when Saturn is in a certain position, this is good luck. And so he's got all the right signs. So this is a big slab they found at the Temple of the Inscriptions in Palenque in Mexico. So this is a Mayan motif, the underworld, the above world, and safety. Like I said last week for people that were here, the Mayans liked creatures like the rattlesnake. The rattlesnake could go under the ground and come back, go into the underworld and come back. The eagle could fly up into the heavens where people could go and come back. The jaguar could go into the night, into the dark, which everyone's afraid of, and come back. The turtle could go into the water and come back. So all these were kind of special good luck signs for the ancient Maya. This is a jade mask. Jade was really popular down there. A jade mask from that same area, Palenque of Pakal, the ruler there. This one, I'm not sure if this one's all jade, but I'll show you another one here. This is a famous jade mask in Guatemala in the archaeological museum there. There was a lot of speculation there on what jade was all about. Only the ear spools, only the little round things at the bottom of the ears are actual jade. The other things are like jade, but in the real purest sense, they're not jade. Only the little ear spools, only the little round things are jade. The others are varieties of things that they call jade, but they're not now real jade. But who cares? You know, it's beautiful anyway. Also in Copan, in Honduras, which is one of the really famous Mayan centers, it took them a long time to figure out, they used to think, why was this center so popular? Why was it so famous? And now they found an old temple underneath, like three layers down, three temples down from their temple that they have today that they've been working on for so long. And this is what they call eccentric flints. These are flints that the people carved, chipping away to make eccentric figures out of. And this is one of them that they found down there. They found a whole beautiful collection of eccentric flints. So they just make these stylized things. But you see the Mayan forehead there, the slanty forehead, big nose, big lips. They like cross eyes too. They hang, I think on the sheets, they hang a little thing in front of babies' noses so they cross their eyes. We're trying to do it the other way around. They, some of their portraits and things like this out of jade or out of stone will have a ruler with cross eyes. So it's a sign of beauty. Big nose, big lips, and cross eyes. They would put a board on there. This one was in, this one's from the last year. This is the last year that they did. Because I was down there two and a half years ago, and this wasn't discovered. And now it's discovered. So these don't show up very good. But these are some also the figures they found at Copan. Really artistically done, the Maya. Some people say, oh, they just look like a bunch of, you know, whatever. But the Maya really did have some individual styles about them. And some of them now, they can tell were individual people. And they've also found now that the works were signed. Before they thought it was like the medieval times with just anonymous artists, but a lot of these works were signed. Here's kind of just a quick look at various Mayan faces. You know, they aren't just all the same. They do show people in various stages of things, from the grotesque, the godlike contortions or whatever, to human types of things too. Oh, I knew this wasn't that. We're not looking at it in the real life. This is another common type of thing that happens in Mayan art, the old Mayan art. This is a woman. She's like a queen mother, and she's preparing for her son to ascend to the throne, and she has to purify herself. And there's a book out now called The Blood of Kings. The royalty were the ones, first of all, in the early Maya, who had to do blood sacrifices. The women or the men both would put a little cord with spines on from like stingrays and stuff, put a hole in their tongue, put it through their tongue to get it to bleed, or pierce their ear lobes or ears. The men had to pierce their penis and to get blood to flow. The royalty had to do this at first. Then it got later into more of everyone doing it. But she's purifying herself here. She's got a little bowl down here with paper in. They would put the blood on this paper and then burn it. This is a vision serpent coming to her. She's getting a vision. It's like we talk about people that are joggers or something, getting the runner's high. Well, if you lose a lot of blood, you can get a high from this too. And so she's lost enough blood that she has this vision. And the serpent, when it comes down here, sometimes it'll have little circles underneath that show that he's a visionary serpent from blood. But these little hat marks here, this is blood, this little V type thing. So he's a vision. She's gone lost in reverie. She's lost so much blood. And so she's purified herself to have her son become the king. That's the vision. She's having a vision.
So she's
a dream. It's a vision quest type of thing. She's kind of lightheaded. Yeah, that's the vision. No, that's a dream. That's a dream. It's got like this weapon, but it's that she has sacrificed enough. It's just to show that when you reach a certain level, it's a figurative thing, so not a figurative thing. It's all that thing, I don't know. But it's just showing that she's appeased the gods, or you know, she has the right kind of dream. If you do it right, this is the kind of dream you should have, so.
Right?
Feel good. In the New World, there was a lot of pottery, But there weren't wheels. There were no wheels in the New World. People had to carry things on their backs or on their heads or drag them. There weren't horses. There weren't cows. There weren't animals except those little puppy dogs and turkeys that were domesticated to carry things. Even in the Andes, the llamas and things, they were very fragile. They couldn't use those. So there were no wheels on vehicles, and there were no wheels for potters. And so all the pots were made what they call pinch pots. They'd make these coils of clay, pinch them together like she's doing there, and then just make these beautiful things, little paddles and things to smooth them out. So there were no wheels. There were no potter wheels. And even today, a lot of the potters, even if they have the benefits of a modern potter's wheel, won't use them because they prefer this traditional way. This is just a kind of a subdued shot of the Lacandon Indians in Mexico. But they're the last vestige of the very, very early kind of peoples in Central America. And so they're going. There are only about 250 left. And the Lacandon rainforest is also going, too. So this is the last vestige of another world. Yes, they have been less exposed, and they actually were, they say, monument building kind of people. So they never reached the monument building stage. Like they don't have any domesticated type thing to store with it. So they're more like the hunters and gatherers type of people.
So they're sort of like some of the tribes down in South America, only they're the only one in Central America.
Right, right. So this is the only one left there. This is a thing that doesn't come out very well, but this is a poster they had for 500 years of resistance. And it's a big ceremony they had there, big kind of a meeting of the Americas. Representatives from all the Americas came for this, for the 500th anniversary, to celebrate the black Indian and black resistance, it says there. This is Teclunuman. This is a hero in Guatemala. He is the last one. He was from the Cachiquel tribe. He was the last one to fight against the Spanish. And once he died, that was it. He was the last remaining group of powerful people, powerful tribes. And once they were defeated, Guatemala was under Spanish control.
When?
1540s, I think he was, Cachiquel. He was, it's a national holiday in Guatemala. Here's a kind of symbol they use for once Teclunuman died, he became like the Quetzal, like the phoenix, and went into the heavens. It's a national holiday. It's a school holiday more than anything else. Some variety of peoples in Guatemala. On some of the coastal areas, you have the Garifuna people that came from Africa 160-some years ago, various other people. In Belize, was in Belize, and this is almost happening in Guatemala too. There are a lot of people coming from Taiwan. And if you go to Belize, you go to the zoo, it says, do not feed the animals in English, Spanish, and Chinese. So Chinese people are becoming so predominant in some of these countries, especially Belize and parts of Guatemala, that they print in Chinese. Some of these stylized greeting cards that they have now, the ancient Maya traditions. Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus. Also, Mary and Joseph and Jesus there. This is an ancient tradition they had too. In March, around this time of the year, it's a real windy time of the year, and they fly these big, big kites. Some of these things are like 30 feet across up in this area. San Juan Sacatepecas, where I said the cloth came from that I wasn't real thrilled with at first. But San Juan Sacatepecas now is where they fly these big kites, and you go down there on one of their big holy days, and it's big mobs down there, watch these people fly these kites. It takes like 5 or 6, 7 people sometimes to hold these kites down, they're so big. This is a woman from Nabah. One of the bags I had here is a real kind of stylized design like this from Nabah. She's also from an area that had a lot of problems going on, but now it's much freer there for people to live. One of the men in kind of traditional wear with kind of felt overpiece there. Even though it's cold in some of the areas, the high mountains, it gets warm enough during the day, but boy, I could never wear that stuff. You know, I had a hard enough time wearing t-shirts sometimes. People got used to wearing these warm types of things. It just became part of their life. Another woman with some kind of a wrap, a big band wrapped around her heart. She doesn't have the little bottles on it. But she's from up in the area in the north too. She's another area that is just opening up now. Another one, she's got more bottles than I had there. Big one. This is everyday wear now for people. Not dress up. From the men from the Solo La area. There are things that are men wear a skirt and they're a little wraparound skirt. It's just an all-purpose kind of thing used for blanket or whatever. Very typical in Guatemala. Don't have the front teeth. No one ever says, hey, you don't have any teeth. Women working on their backstrap looms. They still use the traditional type thing. Put the tie a loom onto a pole in the house or something, put the strap around their back, lower back, or behind, and weave with that. Backstrap looms. You can go into, this is out in Aguas Calientes, an area that's very popular outside of Antigua, and you can go out there and spend a week, spend 2 weeks, and work with someone and learn how to weave up there, live right with the family. Oh, that would, yeah, that would be part of the family. So if they marry someone, the loom would live. No, it'd be a home. This is, there was something that went on that I really became aware of only a few years ago. There was what they called this country in 1920s, 1930s, a Mayan revival. And there were a lot of Mayan architecture around. This is a shot from a theater in Los Angeles that I'll show you a picture later. It looks a lot like the new temple that they found in Copan. No one had seen it so just recently, but this looks a lot like that temple that they found, the front of the temple. So there was a Mayan revival. In fact, Frank Lloyd Wright's earliest influence was Mayan architecture. And these are some of the early buildings that he did out in California that were Frank Lloyd Wright. The high vaulting kind of style was early Frank Lloyd Wright, but it was Mayan influence that he did. These also look a lot like some of the Mayan places out in Mexico and Guatemala. This next one's a little bit better picture here. This is definitely Frank Lloyd Wright, but it sure looks like a Mayan temple. That's amazing. Even when he went to Japan, he did Mayan architecture in Japan too, when he went there and picked up some of his Japanese influence. This is the kind of drawing of the new temple they found in Copan just recently. And so you have the big temple, that like the steps there. This is where they always have been studying these, what they call the steps of the inscriptions. They have 125 steps. It's the longest kind of like inscription thing that they have. It's here, it's not reconstructed yet, but here they show underneath, when they were digging around this, trying to put the steps back together, they found this other temple. And this was the real sacred temple that was the source of power in Copan. And so now they found this temple underneath there that they never dreamed was there. They knew something was in that area that was important, so now they found it. This is kind of inside the place that's still intact, up on the border of Belize and Guatemala. And the colors, the amazing thing is the colors that the people did use, the natural dyes, the real reds, the real yellows, greens, turquoise, blues, just some really vibrant colors. And the temples that we see today that look just like white on the outside were all colored and painted up. Put little statues and things in there, just sacred kind of things. But this is more of what a temple would have looked like. Real red and colorful. Red was a big color. So these things were all painted. I did some salvage archaeology in Belize. I could save things if they were plowed open or whatever. This isn't where I work, but this is a lot of where I live. These things are all over. They call these royal burial mounds. It'd be like a rich person or a wealthy person, influential person, be buried here. They're not real big, but the looters love them because they could just dig a trench right straight into that mound and get the goodies out from inside. And then everything was lost for anyone studying to know what the people had done in that area. But where I lived, they were everywhere. I had places, and I just legally couldn't enter these things unless they were ripped open with a tractor or something. And people said, well, I can solve that for you. And let's go over here with my tractor and rip that one open. Yeah. So, but I never got into that. But some people would bulldoze these things down with bulldozers. The Mennonites were really big on doing this to put more things in production. At that time, sugarcane or marijuana. So I was pleased in my area that my efforts working with children, working with people, they started saving these. They realized that culturally these things are very important to them. Whoops. You guys are flying upside down. Got tired of the blood rushing to their heads. These are called the voladores, the flyers, and they're popular in various parts of Mexico, Guatemala. But this is a ritual that still goes on today, an ancient ritual. In Mexico, they have the man on top gets up with a little drum and a little fife kind of thing and plays almost like drum and fife music from Scotland or somewhere. And he's up there playing this, and the men are swinging, and they have this rope. They start at the top, and they keep going and going and going, and gradually they reach the ground, swinging around. Some people die like this. I've known some people who have lost family members in these types of things. It's only certain parts of Guatemala and Mexico. But it's a big custom yet today. These are amateurs who decide that they're part of the tradition of the village or something. Yeah, a bungee jump, yeah. A little more subdued. It's kind of like a wheel on top there. So this was later, I mean, this is something they did, but once the wheel came, then they could have this thing. So it's wrapped around, and as the thing unwinds, it lowers them down. Yeah, so the way the men, just the centrifugal force, they're spinning around by the time they get down the bottom. It takes a little while, too. I've seen it a couple times when I've done this. Yeah, they can, but if you can just kind of stabilize themselves, they go slow enough, they can kind of stabilize themselves if they're doing that. Or it got going too fast, and they couldn't stop it, you know, and smack on the ground. Here's a language teacher at one time. He has a brother working on these little tiny parrots and things that they make in Guatemala, kind of a tourist trade. So that they make a lot of money doing this, painting these tiny little birds and things. Moving into a more modern area now. But this is some people who have the Virgin there. They're doing a worship service for the Virgin, but she has a huipil cloth on that is copied from the ancient Mayan glyphs. So they use some of the same decorations, so some of the patterns that they have, some of the materials I have here, are off of the glyphs. They're off of the traditional things. So they looked at those and kept it true to the old style. Here's one of them. I have a little bag in the back here. It's from Chiapas up in Mexico, a Mayan area there. And this is a motif that's supposed to be looking at the sunrise and the sunset. And they have worked this out that some of the gold things show when the sun is coming up, and then you see more in the middle when it's the middle of the day, and then you see fewer when the sun is going down. So it has a flow to it. It has a sense to it that's from their traditional Mayan art that they had. So they're keeping some of these things alive, which is nice. It's not just tourist art. The bag I have here cost me $40 in Chiapas, but I bought it from a cooperative that I knew they were getting the money. And Guatemala probably costs 40 quetzales, which is about $8, because of the difference in the economies of Mexico and Guatemala. But one of the things I try to buy is from people who I know are going to get that money. I didn't feel so bad about spending it for a work of art, real. And it's not just a work of art, it's a part of someone's life I look at that's put into this. The ancient Maya also used to put little jewels and things in their teeth. Now this is still alive today. Especially it's a big popular thing in El Salvador. People from El Salvador and parts of Guatemala, when they have to, like teenagers, when they need to have their teeth, false teeth put in the front because they've lost their teeth already, they'll have teeth put in, false teeth with stars, gold stars in them. So you'll see some people with false teeth. You know they're false teeth because they have these gold stars in their teeth. But this is a big popular thing now. So it's still part of that ancient heritage to put these in. Some of the bags from the various areas, Sololá, Guatemala, San Lucas. Some of the bags I have in the back here are, one of them is this style. The men, even though most of the men don't wear traditional clothes anymore, they sure carry these bags. These bags are life. That's one thing they still hang on to. You'll never see a man without the bag. And this is some of the new stuff today. This is looking to the extraterrestrial Mayas and all this kind of stuff. You know, so the enigma of this mystery of the cultures of the Mayas and extraterrestrial extrasensory perception. Things light outside of the earth, away from the earth. The powers of Jesus and all these other people came from all those, you know, scientific explanations of where their power came from. And life after death. And so they have, every year, you see these posters around Guatemala and Mexico about this group that gets together and does this every year. Contact, the Maya's contact with Earth. This is a current a Maya mask I have. It's about two and a half feet high, but some carvers up in the area did this, and it's just beautiful. But to me, it was not so much Maya, and even though it's got the fat nose, fat lips, and the eyes not really crossed, but to me, it reminded me more of Northwestern United States people's things. But it was a traditional Maya, that's what they swore. Yeah, I think since all these people came down to that area a long time ago in Bering Straits, some of this probably hung around. This is, some of you probably seen some of these things. When I broke my leg 3.5 years ago, I've been in Belize for a year, and I've been doing archaeology work there, just in the community. When I went back, I said, I just want to put some drawings on my house, some simple drawings. And this was the first one I put on my house. I cemented the wall over, which was just sticks. And I'm just going to do this outline, black and white. And then I had some paint, just some poster paint, I put the paint on. Then my neighbor came over, said, hey, that looks very nice. And he had some tractor paint, orange. And so I put the tractor paint on. I said, that's good. Now I'm going to go and do a drawing on the other side. He says, no, you got to paint the face. I said, no, I'm not an artist. No, I'm not going to do this. He said, no, you got to paint the face. So I worked with him, mixed up the right color, painted the face, and then the rest is history, as they say. So I did these. These are kind of, I did these in a gradual kind of process. That's one wall, another wall. I just kind of got into it, you know, so I just say. Yeah. I say, gee, it's really amazing you could live in the United States where you can learn how to do all this stuff. I said, I learned how to do all this here. I said, you're my inspiration. That's the goddess of the moon. And it's interesting because right now they don't know where this came from. She's got a rabbit in her arms. And they think it's just from a sound that Mayan used to use, a certain sound for rabbit or for moon. They don't know. But it's a current sound. The word for rabbit sounds like the word for moon. Those people kind of stuck these two together. And so it's one of these things, these evolutionary things, that the sound just kind of went along with it. Someone said, what's that up there? Well, that's the moon. They said, well, we call it a rabbit back where I'm from. You know? So they blended up together. So the goddess of the moon, also the goddess of the rabbit. I do too. There's an old woman in the moon, there's a rabbit in the moon, there's what they call a man in the moon, and then there's a cat in the moon too. There's four things that you really can see depending on the shadows. Another wall over there. This head just kind of went crazy. Here's the vision. We talked about the vision serpent. There's the vision. That was the one I really wanted to do. And I put the blood scrolls on it. This is from Yaxchilan. Grinran's went to Yaxchilan. This is the motif from Yaxchilan. And the vision serpent there is in green, got the triangles on it to show blood. And the scroll, the gold and the red, is showing the blood that's sacrificed. The guy planting corn there, he's an old Mayan priest dressed up with his jaguar skin, planting corn for good luck. The woman, I think the next one up there is a woman here. This is a woman, this is the goddess of health, the goddess of sewing, the goddess of painting, all different kinds of things rolled into one. A lot of gods are multi-purpose gods and goddesses. Up above her head are four signs for four planets, and this was also some good luck signs. And the rattlesnake on her head, that is actually the way it was. The rattlesnake on her head, that's the drawing, the way it was. And so that was another good luck sign. This is when the Maya and the Popol Vuh believed that various stages of humanity, one stage that they went through, humans were made out of wood, and they just weren't very friendly, emotional, or whatever. And so it was time for the gods and goddesses to wash them away. So they washed them away, and then you see the shell and another little Mayan person coming out of a shelter. That's the birth of real humans. So we got rid of the wooden kinds of ones, and the new ones came along, a little more emotion. I was also asked by a village next to mine to design, they had this big monument there, like 8 feet high, for 30 years, made of concrete, no one ever did anything with it, and they asked me if I'd design it. So I said, okay. But I was, the kids and people used to sit around this thing all the time, it's like a gathering spot. So I said, one thing I want to make sure, that it's going to be kept up. So I said, this will not be mine. This will be yours. So I wanted the village council, they voted on this, they said they would do it, they'd pay me $20 for the paint. That's $20, please, that's $10 US. Because I said, $10 for the paint, and I'll paint it. It's yours, though. It's a contract that when I'm finished, it's yours. On the front, that big head there, that's that jade head that I showed earlier, just this representation. I drew that on just with dark, like marker, and I wanted to see if anything would happen to it. So I drew it on and left it. I came back the next day. An old man there who used to practice the Mayan ceremonies but hasn't done it for 30 years had burned an offering in front of it. He said, this is sacred. And that to me said, this is worth everything right here. And the fact that that person saw that what I was doing was real and had value, he said, this is sacred. So I put on there, Okanesh, this is the greeting in Maya for this area, Yucateca Maya. Crystal Ray, the name is Crystal Ray and Yo Chen, two little areas together. And welcome in English. They wanted Spanish, but I thought Spanish would break the congruity or the integrity of it. So I'll show you another one in Spanish. But one thing I said with them, if I do this for you, I want to have a woman's head on too. So this is a woman's head off my house. I put hers on too. I have a jaguar on one side, or a snake on one side, and on the back I put a jaguar. But I wanted to give equal recognition to women too, so I put the woman. This is for my own village, a sign I made for my own village, because once I made it for the other village, I said, hey, we'd like a sign here too. So this is Kokukan, this is the god of the plumed serpent, but I put more of a woman's face on it, which I took from an Egyptian mask. A little bit more, the other one's pretty ugly, and so I took this one's more classical Egyptian. But Okanesh, also the Maya, welcome to San Pedro, and then Kichimak, Chul, Wilkaneshish, Wilkeshish, I forgot how to speak this stuff now. And so welcome to Maya in another dialect of Maya, which they thought was more like, hey, really welcome, not just welcome, but you're really welcome. This is a woman I'd worked with when I was first there. She told me that she had studied Maya. She's a Maya. She had studied Maya up in Yucatan to learn how to do different crafts and things, but didn't do it anymore because no one was interested in it. So I told her, hey, I was interested in having a hammock made. I didn't just want to buy one down the market. So she made me a hammock. She made this hammock. Traditional Mayan style, everything. Every knot she made herself. Took her quite a while, but it's a really beautiful hammock, which I still have. It's a work of art itself. Her sister was interested in Mayan things, but things weren't really going today with the Mayan stuff there, and so she got into cake decorating. And really a very artistic kind of person, talented. You can't see this real well, but I made her a sign for decorating cakes by Julia Busto. And so I made a sign for her from the picture of the cake that she was decorating. I took a photograph of it and then painted this. And I didn't know how this was. I said, I don't do these kinds of things. This is my first one again. So. She just was flabbergasted by the size. She said, I'm never going to put it outside. I'm going to keep it in the house. These are some of the things that the women had done for me. When I was first there, I had some Mayan things and some cross-stitch patterns and needlepoint things. I asked them if they would do these for me. And they did. They were very good at doing this kind of work. But they just never had this contact with the Mayan kind of things before. And then as we got working more and more together, things start really springing up. This is the from the Popol Vuh Museum. This is a symbol for the Popol Vuh Museum, the ancient, kind of like the Bible. It was written down after the Spanish came, but it was written down by someone who still had contact with their ancient rites and ceremonies. can't see this very well, but this is my door in Guatemala, and I put the Popohu bird up on the top and the Quetzal down at the bottom to, this is in Guatemala when I moved there. I didn't do much painting in Guatemala, I did just more simple kinds of things. I got David Zafem, Corporate Paz, Salud Comunitaria, which is my job, Community Health, Peace Corps, so people could. So I wanted to relate to the modern Guatemala with Quetzal and then the old tradition, where people out where I was didn't know much about the old traditions. Guatemala is also now is concerned about the environment. And so they said, Guatemala también es mi tierra. It's my land too. The jaguar, their ancient symbol. I worked with some kids in Belize, again, going back to arts and crafts and things, and I made some clay dough. And these kids at first, they just didn't know what that stuff was. They were used to dough from their parents making, or their mother making tortillas and things. And when you always could tell there when they're making tortillas, because it's time for tortillas, you hear this slapping their hands, making the tortillas. You hear it all around the village. But these kids, it took them a little while to get warmed up to making this stuff. And it had salt in it, things like that, which you put in Play-Doh. So they had a taste of it and everything. And finally said, it's not masa. It's not dough like we have with tortillas. So we can play with it. So they got really hooked on it. I did work on paper mache and piñatas. This is a girl who made this piñata. That I was into making pulp paper sculptures, I called it, rather than piñatas, because I hated to see them make a nice thing and then break it. So we kind of would do it different ways to have their piñata. And so she had this one that she said, this is the daughter of the woman who made the hammock. And so she was kind of getting into revival thing too. Some women in another village where I made the big monument, they asked me to come and work with them in piñatas. The mayor's wife said, we want to make piñatas. So one day I showed up. I didn't think anyone was going to come. We had 40 women with children on one arm, on their hip, were making a piñata with their other hand. And it was just amazing. The women just really got into this. We did this for quite a long time, making piñatas. Younger girls started coming in too. This is the mayor's wife making her piñata there. And all the women afterwards, when we went for the first session, and each one of them had finally made at least one thing of some sort. Some of them made three or four. They'd go home and they'd be working on these things. I'd go to someone's shop where a woman was running a shop. She'd be in there working on this stuff in her shop, you know, making piñatas. Her daughter, one of them had a daughter who was a school teacher, said the daughter couldn't do anything. I thought the mother should be the teacher, not the daughter. You know, the daughter just wasn't interested in it because she was a school teacher. She didn't need any more education. But boy, the mother really got into it. So. And I felt good about this because it got people back in contact with their own arts and crafts. Because they were buying piñatas from Mexico for outrageous kinds of money. And then they saw they could make them themselves. They said, hey, this is great. And one person there asked me, do all gringos know how to make piñatas? I said, no, this is your tradition. You know, people from the United States, it's been arts and crafts. I guess that was it. That's the kind of making a recontact with the older Mayan world. So, like I say, it was a great experience for me to see the ancient Mayan, but also to see how to keep some of this stuff alive and not lose this as part of your tradition. So that's some of the Mayan past and the Mayan present. And I'll, afterwards, go and look at some of the material back here, so I'll be around and talk.
Thank you very much, David. I think David is a good example of not only Peace Corps worker taking their skills to other countries, but through their own skill, bringing things back from these countries. Now, if we could only get David to tell us sometime a little bit about his 4.5 years in Iran. In fact, I could probably get one of my granddaughters, whose father was Iranian, to come. That would be miraculous. But anyway.